I've noticed as I age a disturbing trend. Well, actually, I notice a lot of disturbing trends as I age, but like, you know, 34 waist anyway, it's so small now. It's like, did we go to the metric system or something? So that's a disturbing trend. But also the disturbing trend is that I cry a lot more than I used to. Oh, isn't that, that's adorbs. That's totes adorbs. No, I do. I cry a lot more than I used to. You know, I used to be able to see it coming from a distance and be able to gird my loins and, you know, get ready just to buck up and, you know, okay, I can not cry. But now it like sneaks up on me at the most inopportune times. Like a couple weeks ago, I was at the hospital and some friends got some really good news. And so I said, man, that's, and I just, it just was like out of nowhere. It just snuck up on me. And, you know, it's like all the blood rushes to your face and your eyes start to moisten and you do this thing and, you know, and your voice goes real high and you really can't talk or get a breath. And then a couple of days after that, you know, the Eagles win the Super Bowl and I could have cared less about that. No, that's not true. I was happy to see the Patriots lose. But I wasn't happy enough to cry about it. But then I saw this thing that this Eagles fan had put on his dad's tombstone. It's like he had brought his dad's rocking chair out there and then put this banner across it, you know, go Eagles, we did it, Dad. You know, and I'm just like uncontrollably just crying about this stuff. And so I said, I got to get to the bottom of this. So I saw this National Geographic, you know, like TED Talk on why humans cry. And it's pretty interesting. It's like, did you know that when you cry from cutting onions and you cry from stress, disappointment, anger, happiness, sadness, when you cry from onions, you have it's like a totally different makeup of the tears. It's like all the protein stuff that you find in tears from stress, you don't find those in tears from onions. Tears are just like, hey, we get this onion, you got to get it out of our eyes. But actual tears, they have something called a leucine endorphin. You know, when you go work out and you get the endorphins, although I've never actually experienced that, but they say you start feeling better. And so when you cry, you have those same endorphins in your tears. It's a natural painkiller. How about that? But also, wow. But also, they said the main social reason that humans cry, the human animal, we cry because we need to have a way to show others that we need them. Because if you're just there, you know, and all of a sudden you got water coming out of your head, people know, hey, let's get somebody over here. Stat, this guy needs some help. So that's it's a disturbing trend, but maybe it's not that disturbing. You know, because I just find that I need things more now than I used to. I need people more than I used to. And, you know, I would say that if we have a theme of the sermon here this morning is that we need one another. I mean, we need one another. I want us to talk about David here a little bit as a jumping off point. And we could talk about a lot of good things with David. We could talk about the time that David slew the giant Goliath. That's a really great story. That's a real crowd pleaser. Especially for the guys. You know, we like warfare. You know, of course, we just do. We could talk about some of the great things that he did as the king, how he restored the kingdom and made Israel a superpower. Or we could talk about later in Acts chapter 13, verse 22, when it says that David was a man after God's own heart. There's a lot of good things we could talk about David about, but I want to talk about a darker chapter in David's life today. And that's the story of David and Bathsheba. 2 Samuel chapter 11, verse 1 says, in the spring, at the time when kings go off to war, David sent Joab out with the king's men and the whole Israelite army. They destroyed the Ammonites and besieged Rabbah, but David remained in Jerusalem. Now, I did not know that springtime was the time for war. You know, it's like, that doesn't like make a lot of sense to me. Oh, the dogwoods are blooming. Listen to the birds sing. Let's go to war. But apparently that's the time when kings go to war. And so David, instead of going to war, he stays behind out at the palace and he sends the army out. And so they do a number on the Ammonites. There, verse 3, one evening, David got up from his bed and walked around on the roof of the palace. From the roof, he saw a woman bathing. The woman was very beautiful, and David sent someone to find out about her. I mean, perv city. David is being a peeping Tom. He's walking around on the roof, and he goes, whoa, hey now. And he sees a beautiful woman bathing. So he says, go find out about her. Go get her. Now, why did he want to talk to her? Was it because of the content of her character? Was it because she was a sterling conversationalist? Was it because she had a wonderful singing voice? Nope. He wanted her because she was beautiful. And so David sent someone to find out about her. The man said, isn't this Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam, and the wife of Uriah the Hittite? Then David sent messengers to get her. She came to him and he slept with her. She had purified herself from her uncleanness. Then she went back home. The woman conceived and sent word to David saying, I'm pregnant. Then David sent this word to Joab. Send me Uriah the Hittite. And Joab sent the soldier, or sent him to David. When Uriah came to him and David asked him how Joab was, how the soldiers were, and how the war was going, then David said to Uriah, go down to your house and wash your feet. So Uriah left the palace, and a gift from the king was sent after him. But Uriah slept at the entrance to the palace with all the master's servants and did not go down to his house. When David was told Uriah did not go home, he said, haven't I just come from a distance? Why didn't you go home? Uriah said to David, the ark and Israel and Judah are staying in tents, and my master Joab and my Lord's men are camped in the open fields. How could I go to my house to eat and drink and lie with my life as with my wife? As surely as you live, I will not do such a thing. I mean, Uriah shows some real character. He's like, hey, we're at war. I am not going to come home and have a conjugal visit while all the guys are back in the war. Forget that. This throws a monkey wrench in David's plans. Then David said to him, stay here one more day, and tomorrow I will send you back. So Uriah remained in Jerusalem that day and the next. At David's invitation, he ate and drank with him, and David made him drunk. But in the evening, Uriah went out to sleep on his mat among his master's servants. He did not go home. In the morning, David wrote a letter to Joab and sent it with Uriah. In it he wrote, put Uriah in the front line where the fighting is fiercest, then withdraw from him so he will be struck down and die. I mean, you know, it's going from bad to worse. So while Joab had the city under siege, he put Uriah at a place where he knew the strongest defenders were. When the men of the city came out and fought against Joab, some of the men in David's armies fell. Moreover, Uriah the Hittite was dead. So here you have David, King David, man after God's own heart, slew the giant, you know, made the armies and the nation of Israel a great superpower. He starts at lust. He goes to adultery. Then he goes to deceit and lying. And then he goes to murder. You know, think about the darkest chapter in your life. You know, and as I ask that question, because this obviously is a very dark chapter in David's life. As I say, think about the darkest chapter in your life. I see a lot of heads doing this. You know. I mean, because our minds, we just go right there. It's like, you know, and David pretty much brought this on himself. Maybe you didn't bring it on yourself, but it still stung the same. It still obliterated you. It still damaged your faith. It still made you cry and weep until there was just no more tears to come out. Think about that day. Think about that time. Think about that chapter in your life, the very worst time in your life. You know, as you look around the room here, I mean, you know, we have so much shared history as a group, don't we? I mean, you know, we know each other. We've been friends for decades, long time. I knew some of you guys when I was in college, long time. And, you know, as you look around, you see, okay, I remember what you went through, Mickey. You know, I know some of the stuff you've been through. Wayne, I know some of the stuff you've been through. Leah. I mean, you know, when it gets dark, it gets dark. Kevin, Manda. It's like we all got these times in our life where we know, man, there is nothing that could ever, ever fix this. That's why we need one another. We need one another. Dark chapters happen in people's lives. Dark chapters happen in churches. Churches lose their way. Churches start doing badly. Things start going bad. Look in Psalm chapter 51, verse 1. And this was a psalm. You know, the book of Psalms is written by a number of authors, and David was one of them. In Psalm 51, and read the liner up at the very top. It says, "This is for the director of music." This would be for Nick Leffler, apparently, if he was around. "For the director of music, a psalm of David." David wrote this psalm. And this was when the prophet Nathan came to him after David had committed adultery with Bathsheba. So not only do we know what David did, but we also know what his state of mind was like. After Nathan, the prophet, came to him, he says, verse 1, Psalm 51, "Have mercy on me, O God, according to your unfailing love, according to your great compassion, blot out my transgressions. Wash away all my iniquity and cleanse me from my sin. For I know my transgressions, and my sin is always before me. Against you, you only, have I sinned and done what is evil in your sight." See, I'm glad that the Bible includes this story about David in it. And the reason I'm glad is because if the Bible was just propaganda and just written by men, you know, to try to get us all to be religious drones and, you know, do everything, they would leave out this part. Because David is one of the good guys. And yet it goes into intimate, searing, gross detail about how David abused his power, lusted after a woman, got her pregnant, and then had her husband killed. This is King David. This is one of the best guys. If the Bible was just propaganda and just trying to work a number on us and get us to be just drones, I don't think it would have said this part. And later on, after Nathan comes to David, David gets convicted of his sin. Now think about how heavily armored he was before he got convicted. I mean, it took Nathan coming to him. And those of you who don't know the story, it said the thing that David did displeased the Lord. And so God sent Nathan to him. So Nathan the prophet comes in, he tells him a story. He says, you know, yeah, this guy was going to have a wedding banquet and he wanted to kill a lamb, you know, for the wedding banquet for everybody to eat. But he didn't use one of the lambs he had. Instead, he had a servant who had a lamb that he really, really loved this lamb. It's a little bit like with me with my dog, Axel. I really, really, crazily love my dog. Okay, and that's the way this guy was with his lamb. So what the guy did is he took that guy's lamb and they slaughtered it and they fed it at the party. When David heard about this, he was indignant. He's like, "I can't believe this is happening. You find that guy, he's going to die." And Nathan says to him, "You are the man. You're the man that did this." And see, it's always like that. That's the way you get a guy, is you tell him a story like about Old Yeller or something, and that gets our emotions involved. But he says, "You're the man, you're the one that you took Uriah's wife and you took her for your own, you got her pregnant, and then you killed Uriah. You're the man." And it says, when David heard that, he succumbed. He was like, "Man, I am a sinner." And he lays out his transgression, my iniquities, my sins. He just lays it all out there. And finally, he comes to conviction. You know, and for us to need one another and for us to have the kind of relationship with God and with one another that we want to have, we've got to get to that point where we realize it's me. I am the man. I am the woman. It is my sin. Have you ever noticed how your problems follow you everywhere you go? You ever ask yourself the question, why does this always happen to me? Well, it's because you're you. That's why it always happens. You get a new job, you have the same problems on that new job you had on the old job. How can that be? Well, it's you. You move into a new neighborhood, you have the same problems with the new neighbors you have with the old neighbors. Why? Because it's you. You carry your problems with you everywhere you go. And David finally says, "It's me." And you know, all of us that can say that finally in our lives, "It's me," that's the first step on the way to restoration. That's the first step right there. Oh, where do we go here? We need one another. That's the point. We need one another. We have so much shared history in this room. As I look around the room, I know people here from when Kim and I were in New York City. I mean, you know, lots. Ron and Christy Cole. They were in New York with Dave and Miriam Wyatt. They were in New York with us. Fabian and Rebecca De Leon Fraze. You know, Kim and I know Rebecca Fraze is Rebecca De Leon. They're both pretty good names. But it's like, think about, we go back. We go back a long way. Stephen and Gregory, we knew them in New York. All these guys at Cornerstone, we knew them when they were in New York. Laurel Kinsey, Laurel B.B. Kinsey. You know, we know all these people. We know people here from Montana. We have connections from Montana. Jan Jennings, she was Jan Leach. She traded up in names when she got married. Just like Kim traded down when she went from Kim Capriotti to Kim Sapp. Well, Jan traded up. Jan Leach, I mean, you know, I studied the Bible with Jan all those years ago. Me. Kim wasn't out there yet. We weren't married yet. So I studied the Bible with Jan. It's crazy. Carrie Vermock. Carrie Griner. You know, it's like we all know each other. Back here we got Kendrick, Karen, Betsy, all sitting in a line. You know, this is family. We're just family here. All the Atlanta people. You know, Blake and Leanne Nealon. They're here from Gainesville. Now they're here at Northview. I taught Leanne how to drive a car when she was a teenager. How about that? She was... Yeah. I didn't do a very good job, did I? No. Oh. Greg and Vicki Dixon. Knew them. You know, we just all have all these connections. All these connections. You know, 2003, Kim and I, we went, like after the church exploded, we imploded. Was embalmed. I don't know what happened, but Kim and I went to a lot of different churches. And we said, okay, we're going to go to this church. And we go, and it wasn't like in our family of church or anything. And we'd go, and it's like, you know, it's nice, but it's just like, these aren't our people. It's not my tribe. You know, it's like a bunch of strangers in church. And so we could not get away from the tractor beam that is the church. And we came back on in. You know, I did a lot of people's weddings in here. I remember when Angelica and Ill, the first time they met, were having a big dance over at Chateau Elan, right? And I remember I saw them dance, and I said, oh, hey now. That's working over there. I did a couple's wedding here in the church. And when I was doing the wedding, I said, I made a huge faux pas, the biggest faux pas in the history of weddings. I was reading a passage from Song of Songs where it says, I will sit in the shade. And I read it, but I didn't say sit in the shade. Steve. And that's about what happened at the wedding that day. Steve, no, you didn't. Yes, I did. But they still love me. They're still here. I'm still here. You know, we need each other. We have all these connections. And that's just me connecting. You're sitting over there. You're connecting. I mean, it's like we are a giant ball of connections here. We need one another. Main reason we need one another is we have blind spots. You know, we all think we're experts on everything, but we're not. And, you know, I like the game shows that we have on TV. But I really like the old school game shows. I see these things now, and I'm just like, what the, you know, get out of here. Give me Jeopardy any day. Yeah. Only Jeopardy's too hard. It's the biggest problem with Jeopardy. You know, it's like the answers, I don't get many of them. Although one time I was at my relative's house in South Georgia, and they had one of those giant satellite dishes. You know, of course, that's the way it is. Everybody in South Georgia has a satellite dish and a trampoline. But in their front yard. And so they had the satellite dish. You got channels all over. So around 4:30 that afternoon, I watched Jeopardy. And then 7:30 that night, my whole family was together, and we watched Jeopardy. And it was the same episode. So I was doing really good. You know, they asked questions. I'd say, what is King Edward II? What is King Edward II? Very good. Next on the board. What is Lake Huron? Yes, very good. And my family's just looking at me like, wow, this guy is really smart. But no, I was just really a cheater. And so I like Jeopardy, but it's too hard. The game I liked the most was Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? Because one, me, I want to be a millionaire. And two, I liked it because the questions start out easy and then work up to hard. And, it's like, that was nice. I like that. And also you had some extra stuff, like you had a phone a friend that you could do, or the poll the audience. You could do that too. And so I always liked that one a lot. And so I was watching one time and there was this young guy on, and he was like Harvard, graduate, and he was really smart. You know, sometimes you meet people like that and you're just like, am I the same species as this person? This person is really smart and just so smart, but he was a little overconfident. So they ask him the first question, and you know, they start out easy. So the first question is, duck, duck, blank. He says, well, Reach, I think I know the answer to this, but I'm going to poll the audience just because I want to get it out of the way, because I don't need the audience. So he polls the audience, and it's all like 100% goose. So he says, duck, duck, goose is my final answer. Bing, you got it right. Hey, way to go. Second question, similarly easy. He says, I know the answer to this, but I want to phone a friend. And so he phones his friend, and he says, hey, I don't really need your help. I just wanted to let you know that I'm on TV, and I'm going to win $1 million. Okay. So then he's flying through the questions. He gets up to $640,000. But he doesn't have a phone a friend. He doesn't have an audience. And so they ask him a question of the following four names, which is a Pokemon? And all the blood just drains out of his head. And he's like, blah, blah, blah. He had no clue. He had no phone a friend. He had no audience poll. He had no clue. Now, understand, seven-year-olds around the country are yelling at their TV station. Yelling at them, Jigglypuff! It's Jigglypuff! And that's all he needed. But he didn't know it, and he got it wrong. And he's out. He won zero. He needed some help, didn't he? He needed some friends. We're not experts at everything. I think that's the message. You're not an expert at everything, although you think you are. You ever notice how when you drive home from church, like you drive home from Cornerstone, and you're like, you're talking to your wife, these guys, really all they need to do is just do this. Do that, reorient here, and then go. And your wife's like, oh, honey, you're right. You're so right. And you got it all figured out. You got it all figured out. We do it in Northview. If Steve would just shut his yapper sometimes and do this and do that, then we got it all figured out. And we think we're the experts, but we're not. We need one another. Why? In your car, you have blind spots. You can't see when something's coming up. We need the different perspectives of people all around us. The Cornerstone Church, you are honored guests today. We love you guys. We're so happy you're here. You're very important. You're very important. People are watching what happens at Cornerstone. Do you know that? People are watching what happens. Now, nobody's coming right out and saying it, but they're kind of like, I guarantee a lot of those churches that are around you, they're watching. Because they want to see if you guys are going to suck it and die and a prime piece of real estate come available. They're watching. Members of our fellowship in our churches, they're watching. They want to see what's going to happen at Cornerstone. And I don't think they're looking at like, are their numbers going up? Are they baptizing more? What's their per member giving? That's not the kind of thing that they're looking for. They want to see if the joy of your salvation has been restored. That's really what they're wanting to say. Because, David, after he admitted his sin and realized his sin, he said, Lord, restore to me the joy of my salvation. Wouldn't it be great to have the joy of your salvation restored to you? I mean, you know, for some it's been so long that we had anything anywhere close to joy that it seems so out of reach. Man, that seems so far away to have a pure heart and a willing spirit and the joy of my salvation. It just seems a long way off. But it doesn't have to be. God can restore the joy of our salvation. So I have a couple things here that I've kind of thought of that I think would show us if we're having the joy of our salvation restored. Now, this is not a comprehensive list. This is not, you know, any kind of, this is just one dude saying, I think a couple things, okay? Signs that God is restoring your joy is one, if you can lay aside your differences and pull together in unity. If the Cornerstone Church and the Northview Church, all the church, if we can lay aside our differences and pull together in unity. You know, one thing I have noticed in my limited time with Cornerstone, there's a lot of coalitions at Cornerstone. There's a lot of groups. There's a lot of differing, you know, entities. There's the board. The board is a coalition. You know, the members of the board. And, you know, we need to be so thankful for these people. They have worked so hard. They have given so much. And it is a thankless task, you know, task to try to do. But you've got your board. That's a coalition. I mean, they're like, here, we've been in the trenches together. We got to fight through that. You've still got the pro-Dave and Sue coalition. You know, there are still people that, I don't understand what happened. Well, this is not fair. But that's a coalition. You got the Ground Zero Grace Coalition. You know, all the guys that, man, they work together and they feed the poor and they do all this stuff. And they're tight. And that's a coalition. And that's great to have those things. But we've got to lay aside our differences to be able to work together in unity. You know, we look at our society now and it's like so polarized. You know, just, I mean, you know, it seems like it's worse now by far than it's ever been. And, you know, we're polarized. There's so much animosity. And everything that happens gets turned into a political football and just, you know, cram it down the field, drive it down the other person's throat. It's just everybody's angry. And, you know, there's no trust. And it's like, you're a black person. You're a male. You're a white. You're a transgender. You know, all this stuff is just like, ah. And sometimes just the cacophony of all the sound, it just drives you crazy. I mean, this is what our world has dissolved into now. But, you know, we've been doing this for years in the church. I mean, you know, we're kind of like looking at the world now. We're saying, amateurs. We've been doing this for years. We've had big old hairy church splits where animosity and people that you were best friends with for decades, all of a sudden you never talk to them again. That's nuts. But those things can happen. Hey, Hatfields and McCoys, you know, church splits. It's like the world is just catching up. We've been doing this for years. And, you know, they have a thing in law called the statute of limitations. And I'm not a lawyer, but I just know a lot. And the statute of limitations basically is a law that says there's a limit on the number of years with which you can prosecute a crime. That's probably all wrong, but basically it works in the sermon. So, it's, in other words, like if I was, you know, accused of murder 15 years ago, say 2003, something like that. If I was accused of murder, and let me just say, I did not murder anybody. But if I was accused of murder, and then today you said, you know, I think Steve did murder. So let's take it back to court. You would go to the judge, and the judge would say, you know, it's been a long time. Statute of limitations, 15 years on murder. Just let it go. That's what they would say about murder. You know, in the church over at Cornerstone, yes, I understand. People left, you got mad. You know, when the going got tough, they took off. And that hurt your feelings, and that made you angry, and all this stuff. You know, you got all these reasons, and I'm sure they're right. I'm sure there are good reasons to be angry and holding on to grudges and mad. But just, you know, let it go. I mean, you know, if they're not going to get me on murder charges now, surely you should be able to do it. You know, I was mad. I was ticked off. You know, I felt I'd been wronged. And maybe I had been. Maybe I hadn't. I don't know. But if you have something that you think that I did wrong to you 15 years ago, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it. It's been 15 years. If it was that important to you, you could have got to me before now. And you know, I was mad, but then I finally just thought, you know, I am just tired of being mad. There's no future in it. And I'm hopeful that that's what our country will get to eventually. It's just like, you know, we're about to rip each other to shreds. All the black people hate all the white people. All the males hate the females. The females hate the males. You know, everybody hates everybody. You know, surely we're going to come to our senses. So let's set an example for the world for once. And let's, you know, let's love each other. Let's let some things go. Let's lay aside our differences and focus in on our commonalities. Because I think we got a lot. I think we got a lot. Number two, welcome back those ex-members. Welcome back those ex-members. I get it, they left, you're angry, you're mad, but just let it go. And then three, let's get the feel just right again. The feel. Yeah, we got to get the feel right. You know, when you have an interaction with somebody and you go up to them and it's like, you don't know, shake hands, hug, fist bump. Now that's in the mix too, so it's very confusing. So you just kind of wind up like, you know. It's awkward. It's very awkward. It feels not right. You go over to somebody's house. Let's just go over to their house. We'll pop in. It'll be fun. Then you pop in. Hey, we're here. And the guy's like, well, let me go get some pants on. You know, and they leave you at the door. It's not fun. It's awkward. And you know, church can be like that too. When you got church, you got a bunch of stuff kind of bubbling underneath the surface. That's not good. We got to get the feel right. A couple of weeks ago, we had that Wednesday night thing where we had dinner together. And I was just kind of a step back. I took a listen, a look. I said, this feels right. You know, the way it felt today here before, that just, it feels right. We got to get the feel right. Now, maybe we call it the feel. I think God would say, no, that's the Holy Spirit being among you and working with you, trying to restore to us the joy of our salvation. Thank you very much.